Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, October 15th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. After shooting, I don't feel safe here anymore. Police put out call for video footage from Champaign. Residents of a West Champaign neighborhood where a 35-year-old man was fatally shot Sunday morning expressed a mix of concern and frustration. Police Lieutenant Nathan Rath said the victim suffered a fatal gunshot wound inside a home in the 2600 block of Lawndale Drive. Crime scene investigators spent Sunday morning processing evidence from the scene, and Rath said officers were still investigating the shooting. On Sunday afternoon, Ron Chubb was repairing his garage door just down the street from where the incident took place. "I'm surprised somebody got shot. This neighborhood is pretty safe most of the time. We have only lived here since April, and it has been pretty quiet. I hope they don't shoot me." The victim had not yet been identified by officials, but neighbor Brad Keefe knew him as a super nice guy who loved his children. He loved everything. "There have been so many shootings here in Champaign, so we moved to Mahomet to get out of this mess, Keefe said. "I'm just keeping up the property until we put it up for sale." Other neighbors had similar thoughts after waking up to the news Sunday. "I'm starting to think the gangs are running this town, certainly not the police," David Ulrich said. "I don't feel safe here anymore. I watch the police squad car lights from a distance," added Nancy Jameson. "It makes me wonder whether I still want to live in Champaign." Champaign police are asking anybody with information about Sunday's shooting to contact their investigations division at 217-351-4545. Police said they'd also like to hear from residents with home security cameras in the following areas: between Kirby and Springfield Avenues, between Duncan and Kenwood Roads, and near Centennial and Sangamon Drives. Anyone wishing to remain anonymous may submit tips to the Champaign County Crime Stoppers by phone at 217-373-8477. Sunday's shooting took place 4 days after Champaign's police chief expressed concern over what he called a significant rise in gang-related gun violence. "None of this is random," Anthony Cobb said Wednesday, the day after shots were fired at the Oakwood Trace townhomes in the 1000 block of North 3rd Street around 9:30 p.m., leading to the arrests of William Laws, 19, of Champaign, and James Borden, 30, of Urbana. Borden was arraigned last week on two armed habitual criminal counts, both Class X felonies. Judge John Kennedy set Borden's bond at $250,000. Borden asked Kennedy for more time to hire an attorney. He is due back in court on October 18th. The Good Fight, award recipient in overcoming trauma, it's about the we, also from Champaign. "For anyone who believes it's impossible to rise above a bad hand life dealt you as a child, Karen Sims can tell you otherwise. A speaker, trainer, and consultant on trauma, resiliency, and addressing root causes of community violence, Sims recalled once taking the Adverse Childhood Experiences test. That test tallies a risk for future health issues based on a rougher childhood. The higher the score, the greater the risk," she said, "and my score was 9 out of 10. The fact that I've been able to get a master's degree, successfully raise a great daughter, work with great people is a testament that what happened to me can be other people's stories." The coordinator of CU Trauma and Resiliency Initiative, the 51-year-old Sims, will be honored with the Freedom Fighter Award on Friday at the NAACP of Champaign County's Freedom Fund Banquet in Champaign. In addition to her work locally, Sims said she's also on the road a lot as a trainer and consultant for her own business, working with schools and organizations in the Indianapolis and Central Illinois areas. Sims is a native of Florida, and before relocating to Champaign County, Indianapolis was her home base. She chose Champaign-Urbana as her new home community 15 years ago because she was looking for a quieter and safer place to live and raise her daughter. Her work in Champaign County has been all about improving lives with families, in particular those who are underserved. She has been a program director for the Access Initiative of Champaign County, which is aimed at helping kids function better and for best interest of children of Champaign County. Before that, she was also Community Connections Supervisor at the former Community Elements Mental Health Agency and was the director of the agency that became Rape Advocacy Counseling and Education Services. The CU Trauma and Resiliency Initiative is an outgrowth of the Champaign County community. It strives to improve community understanding of trauma, educate people about how to watch out for the signs and symptoms of trauma, and provide support and resources for trauma victims. It also trains and dispatches volunteer care teams to respond to victims of gun violence and/or their families. This response is intended to provide listening, empathy, support, and reminder to people that they have resiliency and will bounce back. It's also intended to have a more far-reaching impact, such as helping prevent post-traumatic stress disorder and acts of retaliation after violence. While the award from NAACP will be honoring her, Sims views her work and contributions as part of a collective community effort. Everything she has done has been with other people and with the support of other people. It's not about me, it's about the we. It's a we effort, not a me effort. And from those who served, Officer climbed ranks from Vietnam to Pentagon. Stint in the ROTC put Soldier on a path through war to NATO missions. Lieutenant Colonel Gene Lampkin had a varied career. He was in Okinawa, then Vietnam, at the Pentagon for a while, spent some time in Europe, and even in Crete. It was a long way from Urbana, where he graduated from the University of Illinois in physical education after a false start in history. "I jammed 4 years of college into 5 years," he said. Lampkin, 74, never did teach, largely because ROTC put him on the officer track. In 1968, he was in training, then assigned to Hawks, highly mobile, medium-range surface-to-air missiles. The missiles he worked with had up to a 30-mile range. At Okinawa, Lampkin served from 1968 to 1970 near Kadana Air Base, where B-52s were launched to bomb North Vietnam. Soviet planes, including the Russian Bear bomber, flew from Vladivostok, a Russian port past Korea and Japan, to Okinawa, putting the base's defenses to the test. "They knew when our radars locked on them," Lampkin said, "and they veered off. The Soviets didn't want to start World War III, and neither did we." In February 1971, he was sent to Vietnam. As part of his upward course as an officer, he was moved into a different area, taking responsibility for property at Quan Trai, only a few miles from the demilitarized zone in North Vietnam. Even at the base, sappers, commandos, could slip in at night, sometimes after serving as workers during the day. They could be effective. They blew up 400 tons of black powder, and at one point, it was brought the dust out of everything. At this stage of the war, starting a drawdown, the enemy were North Vietnamese regulars and not the Viet Cong. From 1973 to 1976, he was stationed in Germany, returning to a Hawk missile group. It was still the Cold War. If something happened, we were a NATO asset. Back in the States, he was part of a team trying to determine Army specifications for a large military transport aircraft that might replace the C-130. He was made a major in February 1979. 4 years later, he was at the Pentagon. But there was still more travel late in his career as commander of U.S. forces in a NATO mission on Crete. Lampkin loved the Greek island and worked with NATO forces from all over Europe. Then it was time to retire, and he is glad for his chance to serve the country. "I always wanted to be in the Army, following in my father's footsteps." New trend, fewer waiting until Election Day, area counties doing their part to ease process, from Urbana. Wait until Election Day and stand in line at your polling place, or vote ahead of time. If you prefer to vote early, you're far from alone these days. The number of people voting at their polling places has steadily declined over the past decade as more states have added early voting options, according to the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. In 2004, it was one vote out of five votes that were cast early, absentee or by mail, and the commission said in a report last year. By 2016, that number had grown to 2 votes out of every 5 cast. Illinois is one of 37 states that offer at least some form of early voting, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. In 3 states, Colorado, Oregon, and Washington, ballots are mailed to all voters. Since the early voting option became available to all Illinois voters in 2006, it's continued to pick up steam, according to State Board of Elections spokesman Matt Dietrich. It's gotten more popular with every passing election. Champaign County Clerk Gordy Holton said early voting doesn't have an impact on overall voter participation in an election, but it's a better reflection of how people conduct their lives these days. There are 9 places to vote early in Champaign County, one of which, the county clerk's office in Urbana, is available on every weekday through November 5th, with hours extended until 7 p.m. starting October 25th and weekend hours starting October 27th. Early voting times at the other 8 locations will begin October 25th. Early voting got off to a strong start in Champaign County and has tapered off a bit, but numbers are still on target. The demand so far has been about what we expected, and we expected the demand to be significantly higher than it was 4 years ago. Holton projects about half the votes for the upcoming election will be cast in advance of Election Day, consistent with the 2016 election. Holton is posting updates on early voting counts in Champaign County on Twitter, and according to the last update, 28 days before Election Day, 8,433 people had requested an application to vote by mail, and 2,890 ballots had already been cast, either by mail or in person. In 4 neighboring counties, Vermilion, Piatt, Douglas, and Ford, early voting and requests to vote by mail were numbering in the hundreds as of early this past week, and several election officials said it's too soon to project how popular it's going to be for the upcoming election. As of Tuesday, the Vermilion County Clerk's Office had already sent out 474 ballots to people looking to vote by mail and had 160 of them already returned, according to County Clerk Kathy Jenkins. Another 170 people had already voted early in person. While there are still those who like to wait for Election Day and go to their time-honored polling places, maybe even cast their votes together as a family, Jenkins says she continues to see early voting increasing. The number of those who had done in-person early voting as of early last week was fairly small compared to the registered voting pool in Vermilion County, but people can be wary of change. I would like to see it become higher, but change takes some time. Every year we see a little bit of an increase. While early voting can add costs through extended get-out-the-vote efforts for candidates and more staffing expenses for election authorities, local election officials don't see a downside. Holton has contended in recent years that the current election system using neighborhood area polling places has become outdated, and he's promoted legislation to streamline the election process by allowing for centrally located voting centers and sending vote-by-mail applications to everyone. Meanwhile, early voting is part of the election process, it's required, and it's included in the budget. I don't see any downsides to it at all, said Douglas County Clerk and Recorder Judy Pollock. At this point, she can't say she sees early voting being more popular in that county. What she can say is it's a good thing to make available. I think life happens and things come up. Some people know early on they're going to Florida already. Maybe they're going to be out of town. Maybe they're going to be fearful they're not going to be able to get out of work on Election Day. Piatt County Clerk and Recorder Jennifer Harper contends that making early voting opportunities available helps boost participation in elections based on the number of voters and comments people make when they come in to vote. Nearly 2,000 people in Piatt County, which as of this past week had 12,226 registered voters, voted early by mail or in person for the 2016 general election. Her office will be trying something new for this election, staying open later until 7 p.m. on one night, October 24th, for early voting. We'll see how it goes. To me, it's always nice to make a convenience for the voters. At least three organizations that aren't state or county election authorities, the Democratic Congressional Champaign Committee, the Center for Voter Information, and the J.P. Pritzker Campaign for Governor, have been promoting early voting or vote by mail in the area through mailings. The Center for Voter Information is a nonpartisan organization that strives to increase the share of women, millennials, and people of color in the electorate. Its program director, Lionel Dripps, said the group recently mailed 272,000 official absentee ballot applications to people in Illinois to make it fast and easy for them to request to vote by mail. Voting is our most essential American right, and yet 40 million Americans who voted in 2016 likely won't cast a ballot in the 2018 midterms. In Illinois, 35% of all eligible African Americans, Latinos, young people, and unmarried women are not expected to vote in the midterms. We hope that our vote-by-mail applications will encourage as many Illinois residents as possible to vote in the crucial November elections. It's best to compare information received from non-official election sources with information provided by election authorities. The mailing from DCCC, for example, included limited but not all information about where and when to vote early in Champaign County. The applications to vote by mail sent by the Center for Voter Information and the Pritzker campaign vary a bit from the application provided by the Champaign County Clerk's Office. However, that's not an issue. We're going to process your vote-by-mail application if it comes through from a third party with whatever application you provide. Ford County Clerk and Recorder Amy Federick said her office will also accept vote-by-mail applications from outside organizations. As long as it's got the information, I'll accept it. Also on the front page, election could spell changes for DPI. Pritzker says it relies too much on state funds. The Discovery Partners Institute, the prized Innovation Center plan by the University of Illinois, depends on $500 million in state money and substantial private support flowing to the project over the next few years. That subject has come up more than once in the Illinois governor's race, with incumbent Republican Bruce Rauner continuing to promise that major donors are lined up to contribute, and his Democratic opponent, J.B. Pritzker, complaining that the initiative shouldn't rely so much on state funding. Crain's Chicago Business reported last month that Pritzker appeared to signal the likely death of the project if elected. It should have partners in private industry rather than just rely on a pending state grant, Pritzker told Crain's editorial board. There is no private support as best as I can tell. U of I officials dispute that, noting that Chicago Developer Related Midwest is donating the land for the DPI Research Center to be built as part of its 78th project just south of downtown. And some private money will help build innovation hubs around the state linked to DPI. U of I President Tim Killeen said last month the university has talked with potential donors about many hundreds of millions of dollars of support for DPI and its Illinois Innovation Network. I can't tell you today exactly how much will come in when. We are going to roll out a number of announcements over time, he said last Thursday. There is significant philanthropic interest from individuals, foundations, and private companies. Pritzker campaign spokesman Jason Rubin said Friday that the Democratic candidate understands the importance of technology and innovation to the future of the state. Pritzker founded 1871, a small business technology incubator in Chicago that has helped create more than 7,000 Illinois jobs. As governor, J.B. will prioritize our higher education institutions as hubs of innovation and economic growth. J.B. is committed to working with stakeholders to restore funding for critical priorities and ensure we keep students in Illinois. Rubin did not directly address whether Pritzker will support the state funding for DPI if he is elected on November 6th. The $500 million is part of the fiscal 2019 state budget, which runs through June 30th. But Rauner's budget director said last month the money would be paid out over several years. The U of I could receive $50 million to $100 million this fiscal year. The money comes from the Build Illinois Bond Fund, which has about $160 million available now, and another bond sale is planned for October. That will cover the first round of DPI funding. The rest of the money would have to be reappropriated in future years, which is the case for any multi-year capital funding. That's standard practice. We're not concerned at all about that. We have a phased strategy. U of I officials have said the money will be used to build the DPI Center in Chicago, which will house more than 100 researchers and thousands of students, to expand the U of I Research Park and build a new data sciences center at the Urbana-Champaign campus, and to support a community business incubator run by the U of I in Springfield. The latest hub, announced last week in DeKalb, will use $15 million to build the Northern Illinois Center for Community Sustainability, focusing on food systems, water resource, and environmental change. That $23 million project will also receive private support and funding from Northern Illinois University. Colleen said Thursday that he is very comfortable with Pritzker's support for the project. I'm very confident that we're going to see the kind of support we need, but not all in one day. Colleen said the overall project has generated bipartisan support and a huge amount of interest upstate and downstate and in adjacent states. I'm very comfortable with where we are today. State Senator Scott Bennett said he hasn't talked with Pritzker or his staff about DPI, but he spoke with U of I officials after Pritzker's recent comments and said they did not take it as a death knell because of other conversations they've had with him. He has his own research park in Chicago. I know that he's familiar with the idea. As someone who understands the need to grow new business and to innovate here, I think he gets that. At the DPI meeting last month, Bennett and other lawmakers also pressed Colleen about private support for the project, which was billed as a public-private partnership. Bennett said the original deal was that the state's contribution was supposed to be matching money. They have done a lot of press conferences, mostly with the governor, saying we've got all these things lined up. I've yet to see any names. Rauner, who launched the project with outgoing Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, has promised to donate to the project himself, though nothing has been announced. We've talked quite a bit about that over the last year, Colleen said. It's a very substantial indication of support. Messages to Rauner's staff were referred to his campaign spokesman, who did not return the News Gazette's inquiries on Friday. The governor, who waded into trouble last summer when he was critical of Champaign-Urbana's ability to retain tech jobs, last week criticized the U of I's fundraising efforts as atrocious in an interview with Cranes. He said the school compared unfavorably to private institutions and to some public universities in the number of alumni who donate, though the percentages varied by just a few tenths of a point. U of I officials noted that the university is coming off a fundraising year with nearly $500 million in pledges and contributions, a record. It's in the midst of a $3.1 billion fundraising campaign and is 60% of the way toward its goal. Colleen said the DPI project is adding impetus to the campaign. We're used to raising money. I hope people paying attention to the numbers recognize that, yes, there is more work to be done, but we're really moving in the right direction. Colleen said he hasn't talked to the governor about his comments, but has conveyed the level of donor support for the university, and I think he appreciates that. Anything that he may be concerned about may be from several years ago, if not decades ago. From the local page, county clerk contest unusually flush with funding. This year's race for Champaign County Clerk appears to be a record breaker. The two candidates, Democrat Aaron Ammons and Republican Matt Gradoni, already have raised at least $94,000 since August 2017 and are virtually assured of clearing the $100,000 mark. That's more than the $82,000 total spent in the 2012 race, when Republican Gordy Holton defeated Democrat Charlie Smith 54% to 45%. In that race, Holton, who had been appointed to the position in December 2010 to replace Mark Sheldon, spent more than $57,000 to Smith's $25,000. This year's race is somewhat like the 2012 election in that neither candidate is the incumbent. But there are plenty of differences. Grandoni had an expensive primary contest this year against John Rector, while neither Holton nor Smith was challenged in 2012. By virtue of that primary, both Grandoni and Ammons, a member of the Urbana City Council as well as the husband of State Representative Carol Ammons, have high name recognition. And Aaron Ammons' connections have accorded him access to more campaign cash than Smith had. He's president of a Service Employees International Union local and has received $10,000 from various SEIU accounts, as well as thousands from other union groups. He's also received $2,000 from a number of Democratic state legislators, including Senator Kwame Raoul and Democratic candidate for Attorney General. How much Ammons and Grandoni have spent won't be known until January, when final campaign reports are due. But they've disclosed generous itemized contributions in recent weeks. Ammons last week reported a $10,000 contribution from the campaign fund of his wife, who is unopposed for re-election this fall. A few days earlier, he had reported a $3,000 contribution from his wife's campaign to pay for billboards. Grandoni recently reported a $5,000 contribution from the County Republican Party and $2,000 from the Champaign County Farm Bureau's political fund. And Ammons isn't alone in getting assistance from a family member. Grandoni's campaign has received $35,000 in contributions from his parents, Helen and Jean Grandoni of Urbana, since last year. By the way, the new county clerk will make $98,000 a year, with a bump to $100,000 starting in December 2019. That salary includes a $6,500 stipend paid by the state. Thousands hit the street to urge voting from Chicago. Thousands of people marched through downtown Chicago on Saturday to express their displeasure at President Donald Trump and encourage voters to go to the polls for next month's midterm election. The march took place after a rally in Grant Park organized by Women's March Chicago. The group dubbed the event March to the Polls. A sea of people took to the streets chanting "Let's go vote" as they walked from Grant Park to Federal Plaza. Some voters cast ballots at nearby early voting sites. Chicago is a Democratic stronghold. Organizers say enthusiasm is high, particularly since the confirmation of Trump's Supreme Court pick, Brett Kavanaugh. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, October 15th. Please stay tuned.